folks. Welcome to Heartline. I'm Rita Schulte, a licensed therapist in the Northern Virginia, D.C. area, and I'm passionate about matters of the heart. I want to check the pulse on your heart by taking a look at some of the cutting-edge issues that are affecting you and the people around you, and have you consider, how in the world is all this mess called life affecting your heart? To help stir things up, we're going to be talking to some of the leading professionals in the Christian counseling and literary industry, as well as hosting discussions with real people who are struggling with real life issues. If you want to know a little bit about me, check me out at siftedaswheat.com, where you can ask questions, find out about my book, listen to other podcasts, or request to be a guest on the show. You can also find me on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or follow me on Twitter at Heartline Pod. So let's get going on this journey of the heart. In 1994, Jonna Leach found herself thrust into what would be the most devastating experience of her life. Jonna is no stranger to life's cruel challenges, but this particular event brought her to her knees. It challenged her faith and sent her into a darkness that she just couldn't seem to climb out of. When she found herself sitting on the front porch, wrapped in her mother's down jacket, questioning her reason for living and contemplating taking her life, she knew she needed help. Jonna's story is one of faith, hope, loss, and learning to move forward from the other side of darkness. Jonna has been ministering and teaching God's healing love, grace, and mercy to hurting people for 20 years inside and outside of the church. She's here today to tell her story in the hope that it will be an encouragement to others. Jonna, thanks for joining us on Heartline today.
Thanks for having me, Rita.
Your story began when your mom was diagnosed with a rare form of terminal cancer. Her diagnosis rocked your world and your faith. Start us out by talking a little bit about your relationship with your mother before her illness.
Well, see, my relationship with my mother was not a good relationship. It wasn't a healthy relationship. It wasn't what, you know, a daughter, you know, dreams of having with their mother. We always had conflict, and honestly, that I don't remember us ever having, like, a good, healthy, you know, relationship. That was a big part of the problem, you know, for me when I got the information.
So that was the case throughout your entire relationship with her. You were always knocking heads.
Exactly.
And what do you think that was about?
I think, you know, you're when you're young, you know, you don't know any better, and then as you grow older, you know, you learn things, and as I became an adult, I gained knowledge that my father was unfaithful to my mother for pretty much our entire childhood. So that, you know, unbeknownst to us at the time, there was a lot of conflict with them, a lot of issues emotionally for my mom that she was dealing with, which I think between that and her not having a warm, loving relationship with her own mother, it just wasn't really, you know, it didn't put her in a place where she was probably able to have a healthy relationship. Plus, there was the absence of God in our life, in our family, and I think that that is a huge factor as well.
What did you hoped for or expected in the relationship with your mother?
You know, and that's it right there. That's kind of the crux of the whole thing for me is hope. What happens when, you know, hope disappears or dissipates? Because you live your life always thinking in the back of your mind, one day, you know, one day we are going to have this great relationship. One day when I'm an adult and, you know, she's, you know, that much farther down the road, it's that fantasy reality thing. Fantasize that we're going to have that relationship that a daughter always dreams of having with her mother.
Sure.
And I just clung to that. And as I grew in my faith in the Lord, and I just put all of my efforts when it came to her and I, just my prayer into that God would restore our relationship, that he would heal it, that she would come to know him as well. And, you know, we'd walk up into the mother-daughter sunset.
Sure, yeah. How did her diagnosis affect you?
You know, it was deafening. Because I always say, you know, cancer's not a pretty thing to begin with. But when you get news that your mother is diagnosed with a terminal form of cancer, that they virtually don't know much about. And so there weren't a lot of answers other than they gave her 6 months to live. It was in the, it's adenoid cystic carcinoma located in the lacrimal gland of her eye, and virtually the cancer was going to grow out. So it looks for a place to go, so it grew out of her face. And so most people that I've ministered to, you know, that have lost loved ones to cancer, you're dealing with the diagnosis and then the symptoms of, you know, the treatment. And you don't really see the cancer. You see the person, you know, losing weight or, you know, succumbing to those things that happen to while they're going through treatment. With my mother's situation, you actually were dealing with face-to-face cancer. And I was, apart from the doctors, it was the doctors and myself that actually saw the cancer. I cleaned it. I took care of her. But when she passed, it virtually took up probably a little more than half of her entire face.
Oh,
out.
My gosh.
Yeah, so it was.
So it came out of her eye, so she almost looked like a cyclops or something?
Yeah, it went from the eye, and then it just kind of moved her eye, you know, down and out. But what happened was all of the tissue underneath the skin was cancerous. And, you know, it comes in the form of tumors. So you had this, if you can imagine from like a scary movie, you had just this very, obviously unnatural, but was very lumpy, bumpy, and it just kept growing out. And it went from the top of her hairline to the side where her ear was, pressed up against her nose, to the side of her lip, down to the bottom of her chin. By the time she, you know, actually passed away, it was literally the entire half of her face just bulged out. Mm-hmm. And I would try to, you know, I'd treat it and cover it and, you know, do as best you could to conceal it. But, you know, you can't conceal something like that.
So you were her main caretaker for a year and a half during all of this.
Yeah, and I will add in there that I was running a home-based daycare center. I was living in, you know, I live in Arizona. She lives in California. It included minimum 3 phone calls a day for her treatment because I, being, you know, the main person that she really confided in and shared, you know, all of her, that was the other thing, the pressure of carrying those innermost feelings and fears. And again, this is someone who didn't have a relationship with the Lord. So that also came into play. But, you know, going back and forth, flying back and forth, and then just constantly, you know, on the phone.
Sure. So the physical exhaustion of that, and then the emotional exhaustion, how did all this affect you?
Well, you know, initially, on the onset of it, I think one thing to note was when I got the phone call that she was going to go in and have a little mass removed, a little tumor, what was interesting, I've never had this before in my life, I've never had it since, I knew it was the end. I cannot explain it. I knew it in every fiber of my being. I responded immediately. I flew out. I went. We went as a family, you know, to have it, you know, her surgery. When they came out and said they got it all and it was great news, go celebrate, I had this overwhelming sense of fear and guilt and, you know, what a horrible daughter. Do I want her to die? Because we had a bad relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe deep down, I just had this inner struggle. And trying to conjure up some joy that they got it all, but I knew that wasn't the end. 3 days later, we get the news, and that's when everything just, the fear just kind of engulfed me. And then it was interesting, and I think because of my personality, being everything, you know, you organize things, you make a list, you do what you need to do, you get everything, you know, lined up. So I shifted gears. I went into, okay, I have to organize. I have to call everybody I know. I have to get prayer chains going. I have to get, you know, the spiritual part of it going. I clung to the Lord because I have a, you know, intimate relationship with Him. And I just really went into this kind of mechanical mode of what we need to do.
Yeah, get it done. Just
yep, and I knew that this, in my mind, I'm going to cling to the Lord. He is going to be faithful. He is going to be glorified. And she's going to be healed. Praise God.
Well, what do you think the fear was that was driving you at the beginning of all this?
The absence of hope. Up until that very moment, there was always the hope that we would have a relationship, that it would be a good relationship, because, you know, we had a relationship, mm-hmm. but that it would be a very comfortable, very equally, you know, loving and caring relationship with one another. And all of a sudden, I mean, you just take an eraser and whoop, you wipe that slate, it's gone.
Yeah. Losing hope.
Yeah, and I think that, for me, that was kind of at the forefront of everything was, it was a death. You know, before she ever left, it was the death of the hope. Because as long as she was here and I was here, then this is going to, you know, it's going to all work out.
Yeah, you're going to have the happy ending that you...
Absolutely, absolutely.
So as it progressed, what did your caring for her entail? Did you eventually move her out to your home? How did that look?
No, because she was most comfortable at her home. I have two siblings. You know, our personalities are all different. My personality, I jumped in and took charge. I, you know, met the physicians. I met the people that were caring for her so that I could help care for her. My dad was not emotionally equipped or able to take it on. It was, you know, he found solace in just going to work every day and doing, you know, doing the best he could. My mom relied on me for emotional support, for her medications. You know, when I would talk to her every day, morning, noon, and night, and when I could tell that something wasn't working, I would call the physician. I would get, you know, the medication upped. I would, you know, I would navigate all those types of things for her.
So she was totally dependent on you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And for everything, just to be on the other end of the phone, to be able to share. She would share things with me that she couldn't share with other people. And at the same time, simultaneously, I'm praying this through. And every time that I would make my visits, it was truly the Lord would reveal to me what was going to take place. So I knew the weekend that I would introduce her to him. I knew the weekend, you know, that she would receive him. I knew, it's like I knew certain things. Those things brought in comfort to her. Our relationship at that point took a shift in me waiting for her to more be, you know, mom, I'm daughter. I became her mom.
Mm-hmm.
She became more my daughter.
But on some level, you were getting the relationship that you wanted, right? I mean, you were meeting needs for her. She was confiding in you. Was that what you were looking for?
I would say no, because my what I desired was to be the daughter and for her to be the mother. And when it just, you know, evolved into her being more the daughter and me being the mother, me taking care of her and me doing and being those things that a mother would be for her child, I accepted it because it was something we hadn't had. She was depending on me. She
sure.
was confiding in me, you know. She was leaning on me. Daughters lean on their mothers.
Exactly. So it was a role reversal.
Role reversal, absolutely.
So how did all the stress that you were going through impact your relationship with, say, your husband or your family?
What happened was I became so engulfed in taking care of her that my husband took over. We have, you know, children of our own. So he took over the, you know, working full-time. He owns his own business. So his time was a little more his own. He would take care of not only my kids, but my daycare while I would be in California. Then I would come back. For me, it was very mechanical, emotionally. I pushed everybody out. That's when, I mean, I did sink into a depression, but it was I guess you could call it a walking depression.
Mm-hmm.
I was very focused on what I needed to do.
You were still functional.
I was functional, but I was not me. I remember vividly being at the corner of Southern and Gilbert Roads in Mesa, Arizona, and that's when I dropped down into despair at that intersection.
Mm-hmm.
It became, you know, I just this darkness engulfed me, and at that point, I know that, you know, from pushing everybody away, and I at that point was very upset that God was not being the God I needed him to be. It was very clear to me that she was not going to make it. She was going beyond her six-month diagnosis, but she wasn't getting better. She was getting worse.
So you were angry at God at this point?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I would sit I couldn't go to sleep at night. I would sit there with my Bible. I would because I would attempt to, you know, I want to read it, I want some peace, I want, but I would fling it against the wall. I had so much anger because things were getting worse, and because I had the visual of her getting worse, also her sharing things that were so heavy, you know, that were hard to carry, but I didn't feel I had a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was so overwhelming, and I didn't feel like I could see God anymore. I couldn't feel him anymore. I couldn't hear him anymore. I became very alone. Now, my husband was still there. I remember one night, because I would go sit out on the porch in my mother's jacket and just be alone. And I would do what I had done years ago, which I was a smoker. I would hide and smoke out on the porch, and I was just kind of lost doing what I needed to do for her, but lost in my own life. And I've always had a very, very wonderful marriage, a very loving husband, a very great support system in him. And I remember this one night, I was very frustrated, and I don't remember our exchange. Something was said, and I just walked out, and I slammed the door. And I remember he opened the door, and he said, "But I love you." And then he closed the door, and I thought, how could you love me? I don't even love me. But he told me that he knew that it wasn't me. So he obviously, you know, understood that this was something that was, you know, way bigger than me.
Sure.
But
just the emotional stress you were under from...
Right. And I'm a very, very strong personality. So to try and tell me something, like I said, I had a lot of friends, but I pushed everyone away. I kept one friend, my dearest friend, Colleen. I kept her in my life, but she was safe because she didn't push. She would come over and say nothing. I remember we'd sit out in the backyard in patio chairs and say nothing. I would just smoke.
So why did you push everybody away, do you think?
I really was tired of hearing what people say. And that's, you know, a big part when people are grieving. When you're a believer, people want to hand you scriptures.
Absolutely.
And that really is not when you've been, you know, in the place of needing, you know, when you're hurting. More times than not, the scripture doesn't help. Because, it, you know, it's words. I'm not saying it can't help, because it certainly can. But many times it's not, because when you're in a depression, mere words aren't really big enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not. And then the other thing, when you're dealing with a cancer, I remember someone telling me they were identifying with me, and they were saying they had lost their mother and their father to cancer. I got more angry when I would hear these stories, because theirs was different. I've never to this day met someone who dealt with the actual cancer. I was face-to-face, it felt like, with the enemy.
Right.
Because I was looking at this ugly mass attached to my mother that I could do nothing about. Whereas the other people I felt like that would share with me that they had lost, you know, loved ones, you had the luxury of not having to see it. You dealt with comforting your loved one. You dealt with bringing joy and love to them and compassion. But you didn't have to see the actual cancer, you know, come face to face and actually get your hands dirty, get in it, you know.
How was your mom's mood at this point? I mean, was she crying? Was she distraught? Was she afraid?
She had a lot of fear. She was quiet. She was afraid. We couldn't talk about actual cancer for a long, long time. We finally did get there. But she became, because my mom was more... a little more bold, more outspoken, she became more withdrawn, more quiet, more almost like the child that had been disobedient that was almost like being punished, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think for her, based on what she'd shared with me at different times, I think she wondered, because she, like I said, she came into a saving relationship with the Lord, and I think she didn't understand why is this happening to me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why me?
Well, that's powerful that she accepted Christ.
Absolutely, and it really was, when I say, you know, saving, as far as her being saved, it really did save her, because when she did accept him, there was a shift in her demeanor. She, as I lost hope, you could see that she was gaining hope. She had, I mean, God was moving in her and bringing her...
to a place of acceptance.
Absolutely.
So what do you think... you needed, you obviously, doesn't sound like you were taking real great care of yourself during all this, and self-care
is
huge.
No, and I kept putting myself off.
Mm-hmm.
you know, I just thought, you know, there will be time for me when this is over.
Mm-hmm.
And the different stages, because I did for the longest time, I absolutely knew 100% she was going to be healed, that there would be, you know, God would be magnified and glorified, and we're going to have a great story. And many, you know, are going to come to know the Lord through her. I will say many did come to know the Lord through her. And that was something that was a faith builder, was that even in the midst of what she was going through, God would move people in and out of her life, and they would come to know him through her and her experience. I think she accepted that she was leaving long before I did, but she wouldn't acknowledge it. But through her demeanor and the things that, you know, how she acted, I think she knew all along.
So looking back or giving some advice to people who are going through a situation like this where they're caretaking, and I've been there too, what do you need to do to take care of yourself on the front end of this thing? Because it's really, really important, and people generally don't do it, and they burn out or they go into this major depression. Was there anything you could have done as you look back to maybe take care of yourself a little bit?
I think that, one, it's very important to have a support system and to have those people that you can truly be yourself, that, you know, you can talk and that are going to listen more than speak. Because that's what I ran into a lot, was you would start to share and either people get overwhelmed or they want to share their story to make, you know, somehow mm-hmm. make you feel better, showing you they identify. I think having someone in your life, you know, I had my husband and I had a great pastor. I had my best friend and I had a few other key people in my life that I was able to say those horrible things that other people would be shocked to hear me say.
Mm-hmm.
And just get it out. I think the hardest thing is when you have to keep it bottled in. The depression really takes on, you know, a life of its own. Because for me, there was that night that came where I sat out on the porch. I'm wrapped in my mother's jacket, and I could see no reason to live. And all I heard was, you know, to go grab the gun.
What was the hopelessness about for you there? Because on some level, your mom and your relationship had been restored, and she accepted Christ. What do you think the hopelessness was about? Was it just about losing her?
It was about never knowing that I will never, ever have what, from a very small child, I had always longed for.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a good relationship with my mother. I wanted her to be my mom. I wanted to be her daughter. I wanted to share. I wanted to, you know, there were a lot of questions I had. You know, here I was, a mother with three kids and a marriage, and I had so many things that I wanted to talk to her about, ask her about, you know. And then I wanted memories. I wanted to create some great memories that you know, of her and I doing things. And I, for me, I mean, that was the whole thing right there lied in that's never going to happen.
Right.
And I felt like God was punishing me.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, you know, what did I do? You know?
So maybe some false beliefs about God then. God's punishing
Absolutely.
Me. And the loss of, a lot of abstract losses for you. Loss of role
right.
loss for one. Because when even though the relationship was better, it was still a role reversal with you being
right.
the parent almost.
Right.
So a lot of losses for you with that. How did you come out of the depression?
When I wound up on the porch, that was, well, because I would spend a lot of time on the porch at night. That one night where I was contemplating taking my life, my mom was already gone. And I knew at that point how unhealthy that was, you know, for me to be thinking those things. I mean, here I was with this beautiful marriage, with these three beautiful children, with a full life ahead of me, but I'm not able to see what I've got. And so I knew at that point, something's got to happen or something's going to happen. And I remember talking to my husband, and I think he was thrilled at the aspect that I was going to get help, because prior to that, I had a real attitude about getting help. I'm not going to take care of me, even when he would suggest, I'm not going to do that because I have to take care of my mom. I'm not going to spend any money on that because anything I spend is going to be on my mom, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally had this release that I could go and do this and that I had to do it, and I had to do it now.
So you went to counseling?
Yep, found a wonderful psychotherapist who was also a believer, but she wasn't throwing scripture at me. She was very real, and she helped me come to terms with the reality of the relationship I had with my mother. Two things, the reality of the relationship I had with my mother and the reality of who God was for me. Did God change because I didn't get the answer that I wanted? Was God different? Did God become a different God for me? And I came to realize that, no, God's the same God he always was for me. And then God began to reveal himself to me of where he was, that he was always there with me. But I was in such a dark place, I couldn't see beyond that dark place. I think there was a real struggle there with fantasy and reality for me, the fantasy of what I always wanted and the reality of what it really is.
And did you were you able to bring congruence to those?
Yes. You know, it took a while, and it took, you know, I had, I can't remember if I was in therapy for, you know, 8 months, maybe a year. But it all kind of like a puzzle kind of came together. Also, I think, you know, nobody likes hearing it, but time. When you're given time and space and you're allowing things to, you know, you're allowing yourself to learn about what's taken place. For me, the relationship I had with the Lord, the relationship I had with my mother, God revealed to me one time, it was like sifted as wheat. It was a sifting. It was taking my mom, and visually what I saw was the Lord had put her through this sifter. And all of a sudden, I saw these bright, colorful packages, and they were, you know, bouncing in this basket, and they'd been sifted. And the Lord was opening these packages for me. And I began to see all these wonderful things about my mother, things she had done when we were little, things that she had brought to us, you know, us kids, you know, as we were growing up. It was like the positive that I couldn't see.
Mm.
God began to reveal those things to me, which were, you know, gifts to me. And I began to realize that accepting things for what they are versus living in a constant state of what you want things to be like, there's huge healing in that alone.
That's powerful. Jonna, I just can't tell you how much we appreciate you sharing all this. I know it's going to be a blessing for other people to hear your story. And thank you so much for your willingness to come today and be a part of our show.
We are welcome, and thank you.
Okay. God bless you.
God bless you, too.
Thanks for joining me today. If you have a question or comment, or you'd like to be a guest on Heartline, I'd love to hear from you. You can contact me at siftedaswheat.com, on Facebook at Rita Schulte LPC, or Twitter at Heartline Pod. And remember, it's your heart. Keep it alive. Check the pulse.